The goodness of sex keeps us from elevating to a Solomonic level, and it brings us pleasure without determining our identity. This means more than simply having sex with your spouse frequently. It includes employing your heart, soul, and mind, awakening all your senses. One common misconception about marriage is that if a couple is having sex regularly, things are good in the relationship. Sexual health is sometimes a marker of a good marriage, but not always. Often, when we find out that one spouse has had an affair, we wonder, how often were the married couple having sex? The truth of the matter is, Solomon wasn't satisfied with having sex every day, possibly multiple times a day with different women. We are truly satisfied only when our hearts are first satisfied in Christ's love for us. Sex is meant to bring pleasure, but only the love of Christ brings identity. When we forget about the love of Christ, or when we look to sex to define who we are, we will end up distorting it. We will use it in ways that it was not meant to be used. Our children will be tempted to use sex to define themselves, just as we are. At times, we even play into this temptation. We infer that if they aren't sexually active, they are somehow better than others who are. We teach them that their sexual goodness defines their identity. When we do that, we unintentionally teach them that failing sexually determines their identity as well. But when we find our satisfaction in Christ, the futile or vanity-filled search for identity through sexuality is cut off at the pass. Our sexual goodness, our sexual badness, our sexual desires, none of that is meant to reveal our true identity. None of it can bear the weight of sustaining our humanness. Only the truth that we are image bearers who have been loved and redeemed can sustain us in the search for meaning. The Book of Love. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. Song of Solomon, chapter 6, verse 3. Don't read this book until you're married. Single men shouldn't read this book. Teens should not study this book. Its content is too graphic and explicit. All of this has been said about the Song of Solomon. The monastery, the small church, or the rabbinical school may warn that the song is too hot to handle. It is full of euphemisms, double entendres, and word pictures that we are thankful remain as word pictures and don't get made into real pictures. This part of the book is a little different from the others, because the Song of Solomon is full of references to the goodness of sex in the context of marriage. So rather than focusing on one verse, we will hear the entire book through the lens of this one verse. But how do we read it? Is it purely a love story? Is it a picture of God's love for his people? This has been hotly debated over the centuries, but let me commend you to what Ian Duguid calls combining natural and spiritual interpretation. As wisdom literature, the song is designed to show us an idealized picture of married love in the context of a fallen and broken world. As it does so, it intends to convict each of us of how far short of this perfection we fall, both as humans and as lovers, and thus to drive us repeatedly into the arms of our true heavenly husband, Jesus Christ. He is the only one whose love for his bride is complete and perfect, and whose perfect love is our only hope in life and death. When we read these verses, we are meant to think of married love in all of its fullness. They are not meant for us to read based solely on sex or purely as emotional love, but as the love that is expressed in the two becoming one. But ultimately, as we see how short we fall in the realm of loving and serving our